Hey, we're
the Empty Pockets.
This is Tina Turner.
I'm Chip Davis of Mannheim Steamroller.
This is Jewel wishing you a happy and healthy holiday.
This is Jan Barry.
And this is Dean Torrance
of Jan and Dean.
You're listening to the Sounds of Christmas.
Okay.
Welcome to the Sounds of Christmas podcast. I'm Ken Kessler. If you're new to this podcast, I want to start by saying thanks for joining us. If you're not new, welcome back. Either way, I'm glad you're here. Now, to avoid any confusion, I want to start off by saying there won't be any music played here. This is a place for conversation. I'll talk about Christmas music and some related topics, sometimes by myself and sometimes with guests. If you're looking for music, just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. We play the best variety of Christmas music all year long. Well, except in October, when we play the best variety of Halloween music. I'm very excited to have singer, actress, vocal coach Deb Bowman back with us again. Hi, Deb.
Hi, Ken.
Is that good attributes for you? What am I missing?
Songwriter.
Oh, songwriter. Yes. Tinsel everywhere. I love that. But
It is a great one. That's a really fun one. Yeah.
I saw this on your website. And for anybody who didn't hear the previous episode that Deb did a couple years ago, well, I'll put a link to that down in the show notes. But for anybody who doesn't know, Deb Bowman has performed internationally in TV, film, theater, cabaret shows. Since relocating to Atlanta, she's been embraced as one of Atlanta's finest entertainers. Broadway World awarded her Best Actress in a Professional Play for the 2015 Atlanta Region. She won the 2014 Rice Award, Rising in Community Excellence for Entertainment. Three-time Susie Bass Award nominee for Best Actress in a Musical. She performs nationwide with cabaret acts, including America's Songbook Series, Broadway Reviews, Marilyn Monroe Show, A Christmas Wish List, A Very Diva Christmas, Shaken Not Stirred, Music of James Bond. And I know I'm missing a bunch. But wow.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Now, last time you were here, we were talking about a big holiday.
Yeah.
And you had just finished being Morticia in the Addams Family.
Oh my gosh, that's right.
And since then, and I've only got a couple of things here, so I'm sure I'm missing some. And we want to talk about the new Christmas single, obviously. But before we get to that, The Boy Who Kissed the Sky, what was that about?
So The Boy Who Kissed the Sky, which actually was another Susie Bass nomination for best, it won best production and best direction, and it was nominated for best ensemble, I think. And it was a co-production of a musical. I wouldn't call it a musical, actually. It was a play with music that was inspired and written for the youthful life of Jimi Hendrix. And it was original music. There were some tendencies of Jimi Hendrix in the, you know, orchestration, but it was an originally composed score by Eugene Russell and Divinity Rocks. And it was a co-production with the Alliance Theater in Atlanta and the Seattle Children's Theater. And I spent 2 months this time last fall in Seattle, building the show and performing out there, which was really, really incredible. And then they staged it again in the spring of 2023, just behind us here in Atlanta. And what an incredible journey. It was like walking on music and inspiration and creativity and imagination and all of the things that a young child should live through. I think Jimmy lived too short of a life, and he was an incredible voice in this world. And even though he came from abject poverty and had a very hard struggle in his youth, he was loved, and he was supported through his creativity.
Now, I had heard rumors, and you may not know the answer to this, that The Boy Who Kissed the Sky was going out on the road. Do you know anything about that?
I don't. It's very likely. I do believe that Idris Goodwin, who wrote this script, who's an incredible mastermind scriptwriter, they've already workshopped it again in Boston, and I think they've been doing some non-union projections, and so I spread their wings and fly. I'm sure it will take many manifestations through the universe, but I was privileged to be a part of the original production, and happy that I could be on that journey. So I don't know about the travel.
Is this the kind of thing that could make its way to Broadway? I know it's speculation, and you probably don't know that either, but having been in it, do you see this as something that could go to Broadway?
I mean, I think that a lot of the things that come out of, especially with the Alliance Theater in Atlanta, a lot of the productions that come in that are picked up to fund and build and, you know, take to their next level, a lot of the things that come through Atlanta, Georgia, through the Alliance Theater go to Broadway. And I could name a few productions that have gone on. This particular production, I don't know, because it's more of a children's production. So it would have to kind of take on its own manifestation of like a children's Broadway show. And I don't know that that's really where it would land. I think it would do really well off Broadway. I don't see it as just going to a Broadway theater, you know, down the road. Maybe if Idris, the playwright, and the writers, music writers, Eugene Russell and Divinity would, you know, create a larger version, but it's actually like a 75-minute show. And in that production, I play something like 13 characters and change costumes 17 times. Something insane. I think I'm getting it reversed. 17 characters, 30. Anyway, but it's no, that's actually not true. So, because I would go in and out of different characters, but it was a cast of seven, and we you know, created this incredible tapestry of music and art behind the life and youthful existence of Jimi Hendrix. So I wish it well. I think it's incredible, and it will do well wherever it lives and lies.
Now, it seems like this is a long way from that, from The Boy Who Kissed the Sky, Candide.
Ah, Candide was so fun. Leonard Bernstein. I mean, you know, can we talk about Leonard Bernstein? I mean,
sure.
Wow. What a privilege and an honor to do my first real opera. And I guess some real opera singers would say, Candide is not that. But to me, it was my first in real opera. And I've done some operettas in my career, but what a challenge and what a joy and so beautiful and so powerful and so politically, you know, spoken. It was an honor to do it with the Atlanta Opera, and I got to work with some incredible opera stars, and hope to do more of that.
It must be tough going. I mean, I know it's not like one day you were in a show about Hendrix and the next day you were doing Candide, but it's got to be tough going from one of those to the next. Or is it just,
I think when you're living your life in the entertainment world and you're working, well, equally as a singing, you know, writing, performing radio artist, rather, and then an actor, it's a very different world than a lot of people live. You kind of become accustomed to the work, and the work is diving into the role or diving into the project or investing yourself in the moment. And I started off the year this year working on a film with Francis Ford Coppola, which is coming out next year. It's called Megalopolis. I'm probably not supposed to talk about it, but I think it's okay. I think it's okay. And it's going to come out, and I'm fairly sure I'm going to be in the film. I worked about 12 days on this film as an actress, as a principal character, and it was really rewarding to work with an award-winning, you know, legendary filmmaker, and also be able to work with some incredible actors that I wouldn't get to work with. And then go from that, Candide was sort of overlapped into that. I had already done the first portion of Boy Who Kissed the Sky the fall before, and had flown back and forth for auditions and callbacks for the film, and then come back, do the film, and then do Candide, and then do the second rendition of The Boy Who Kissed the Sky. And through all of that, I was really proud and really felt grateful to be working in film, opera, theater, and then went into recording my next project, which will also come out next year, and recording the single that we're kind of speaking, highlighting, I guess, this evening. But yeah. I feel very grateful. The year hasn't been wonderful as a whole, but when I look at the first more than quarter, maybe the first half of the year, it was a really awesome year. So.
And somewhere in the mix of all that, I think it might have been in the about a year ago, was another season of Stargirl.
Oh yeah, which sadly didn't get brought back.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so sad. But you know, sad. And then we've had the strike, the Screen Actors Guild, you know, the strike for the 118-day strike, which came off of an incredible start to the year, which led to all of these wonderful other things, but was kind of cut off. And so I'm hopeful that 2024 is going to lead to some really great camera projects. That's my manifestation, and I'm working on it. I've already actually had some really awesome auditions the last couple of weeks, where I'm like, yes, we're getting back to something. Something.
Well, you're wrapping up 2023 in a really nice way with a beautiful new Christmas single, your version of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. How did you decide that it was time to get back into Christmas music?
You know, this arrangement, arranged by Dean Franson, the incredible Dean Franson, who was the producer and arranger of my first very first record in 2011, Addicted to Love Songs. We had kind of reconnected in a way where he arranged and music directed my recent project, which will come out next year. But in the process of that, I was like, I would love to lay down a Christmas single in these recording sessions, which happened this past summer. And we had been performing off and on for many moons, a salsa version of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. It was always called, in our mind, it was always called Have Yourself a Salsa Merry Christmas. And it came to life in the studio. And that's really it. It was kind of like we went into the project with the mindset of capturing enough to maybe produce a new record, my fourth album coming out. And I did some other things, which is a message for another day. But we captured this Christmas tune, and I'm really proud of it. And the Jedi, Jeff Jones, who is the producer of this future record, who mixed and mastered, and he mixed and engineered this recording. I just really am proud of it. And he's an incredible producer, and I'm looking forward to seeing what all of the other songs coming out next year, which will not be a holiday record, Ken. Sorry.
Oh.
I know you're all in the holiday spirit
Year
round, but at least we have one in the bucket for 2023.
And I was very glad to see that. And I also saw that you've got some Big Love holiday shows coming up.
I do. December 21st and 22nd in Atlanta, Georgia, at the Orbit Arts Academy. It's in Sandy Springs, Georgia. It's just north of Atlanta. They have a beautiful space, and we're doing a production of a Big Love holiday. It's but they're we're calling it a Big Love extravaganza, and there will be some of my students involved performing, and my Big Love band, and we'll be doing a lot of the music from the album A Big Love Holiday and some new stuff that is going to be premiered, and it's going to be great. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Forgive this because I don't know how it all works, but have you thought about or considered recording any of these?
The live performances?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I should. I actually
I'm not trying to give you homework. But
what about like an audio live recording? Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, that like, or video or both.
Well, I have done some video. So I did the year when we first did our interview in 2021, the holiday shows and the album release concerts around that time, we did some video footage, which actually was really beautiful. I had a lot of concerts that year. So I did capture it then, and maybe I should do that more so. You know, it's hard being an artist. It costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
A lot of time, and you're in, especially when you don't have like a label or a manager under your, I don't know, that's kind of fending for you and paying the bills when you're self-produced, sole-produced artist. It's a lot.
I talk to a lot of artists who are either independent or indie, because some don't like one title or the other. But what it means basically is not attached to a label, that you're doing this yourself. And it is tough because there's so much that goes into just to Christmas music, let alone any other genre of music, to write material if you're going to write it, or to learn the cover and put your own stamp on it, and paying for studio time, unless somehow you magically have your own studio. And mixing and mastering and putting it together and then getting it out there, it ain't free. It's tough.
Yeah, it's tough. Thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
It really is.
And then,
unless you're just lucky and you got somebody that's like helping you fund it, or you know, you have a good source that can pay for the studio time. I don't know. There's ways around it, but
it's tough.
Usually, yeah, and you get what you pay for too.
Yeah. And you know, recently Spotify did their big Wrapped thing where it told everybody what their top most streamed songs were and all that stuff, and it's a good time to remind people that that's great, but the artist gets such a minuscule microscopic
piece of a penny for a stream.
And this is where I like to remind people, go to the artist's website or to their Bandcamp page and buy from them. Buy the album, buy the songs, and maybe you'll get lucky and they'll be able to afford to do more. Support the music that you love.
Yeah, it's tough. It really is amazing. I'm at the point where I've done this long enough and enough times around, and I'm going to keep making music. I don't think I'm going to just stop making music. I had some friends recently ask me, they said, why do you keep doing this? If you don't make any money, why are you doing it? And I think, you know, it's like telling a painter to stop painting, you know, or if you're a carpenter, to stop making wood, you know, carving wood. I mean, like, what are you supposed to do? You create, and ultimately, unfortunately, with music, it costs money to produce it and get it out there, right? So at the end of the day, I don't produce money or produce music to make money. I produce music because I need to share my music, and I need to continue to give to my audience. But it would be really great if someday there was like one hit that, you know, made it all worthwhile. Yeah. But ultimately, everything that we spend, I know for myself, everything I spend on the production side, I don't see anything back in return, literally pennies. So it's really sad. And I appreciate you encouraging people to go to the source. So.
Yeah, and I'll put a link down in the show notes to Deb's website. Do you have a Bandcamp page too, or is it just your website?
I do, but unfortunately, Bandcamp takes too much money, in my opinion, too. I've been a little disappointed in there. You know, like, oh, we're going to support the artists on Fridays, and they still take, you know, a lot of dollars. And a lot of people don't want to listen to certain streaming services because they have to take that extra step to download the app, to buy it, and then it only lives within that app. So don't get me wrong. I don't want to talk bad. I don't know if you're sponsored by Bandcamp. But
I'm not sponsored by anybody but me.
You know, there you go. So the best way really is to download the music. So wherever you listen to music, you know, Apple Music is the most direct way to download my music. You could do it through Amazon too. But streaming, you get like a 0.0001 cents. For every stream, and it takes 500 streams minimum to make $1.
Wow. That's
so
crazy.
It's really sad, you know, it's really, 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 really sad. Well, so it's not about the money, it's just about producing the music. But if you do have that one hit, maybe it does something, you know, maybe it grows, and I don't know. I just try to stay positive.
Yeah. Well, I didn't mean to drag you down, but I did want to point out that, you know, a lot of people who listen to The Sounds of Christmas love Christmas music, and a great way to be able to support the artists that you hear is to buy their music from them.
Buy it. Yes.
Buy it. And while you're there, get a t-shirt or a hoodie or a keychain or something else.
Yes.
Support the artists, and we'll get more. We're lucky to get a new single from you this year. And I will, because I can't help myself, I will always be hoping for more. And, you know, one of the reasons that I wanted to have you back on is that I get a lot of Christmas music that comes across my desk. It doesn't really come across my desk anymore. It fills up my inbox. But every year, and a lot of it is from a wide variety of artists who names that you might know, names that you probably will never know, people who have made something that just because they could, sure. They made it in their garage, and there's no real there. And there will be some that you listen to. And I've mentioned this before, but I got a single last year, or maybe the year before, from an artist who was big in the late 80s, early 90s, and you would know their name, and they did a recording of, I think it was Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree, and it was note for note exactly Brenda Lee's version.
Oh, wow.
And that was neat, but the thing was, they worked hard to make their voice sound like, I don't know, it didn't sound like them. So it could have been anybody. And it felt like this was somebody who was working on something else and had 10 minutes of studio time left, and let's knock this out. And it just didn't mean anything. And I listened to your version of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, and I believe you.
It's such a great song. It's such a beautiful tune, and it's actually traditionally done kind of as a ballad, and a little bit more melancholic, and, you know, and I love this version because it makes you want to celebrate Christmas and feel like you could dance right in the street, you know? I mean, it's just like, it's a joyful thing, and that's what I think. I mean, you know, joy is subjective during the holidays. A lot of people love the holidays, and a lot of people hate the holidays, but we all have our reasons, and we all have our years, right? We have years where we have really great years, and we have years where we're like, oh, I just don't ever want to do that again. But I felt like this particular version of the song was, it was meant to be shared, and it was meant to share joy. And that's, you know, what I hope it will bring to people. So
it's one of those songs, your version is one of those songs that give me that Christmassy feeling.
Oh, that's great.
And I listen to literally thousands of Christmas songs, and the pool of songs that still give me that feeling gets smaller and smaller all the time. And part of that is just the nature of what I do. But
sure.
But there are, I like to be able to talk to artists like you who somehow capture that Christmas magic and are able to convey it in a song that we have all, even though we've all heard the song many times by many sure. different people, it's something new, and you get that, and you get that feeling, and that's worth something. That it's just nice to get something that isn't another cover, another soulless cover of Mariah Carey's Christmas song.
Right.
Because there are plenty of those.
There are
some of them that are very cool, that people tinker with it and make it sort of their own thing. And so I'm not saying something bad about those. I'm not saying something bad about Mariah, but people who are listening know what I'm talking about. And to be able to take a song like Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas and put your spin on it and inject it with that holiday spirit is just magic. And
oh, thank you, Ken. That makes me feel good.
You're very welcome.
And I couldn't, and I will not take full credit. I mean, it is Dean Franson all the way, arranger, his mastermind, and then of course the Jedi, Jeff Jones, who brought in an incredible cachet of musicians. And actually, this is a funny little bit. The recording was recorded. This is a great little just nugget. It was the rehearsal the day before the session. It was the first take, but we were rolling in the studio. So we were in the studio having our rehearsal the night before the sessions, which the sessions were 3 days of sessions for the album that's coming, and then included Have Yourself a Salsa Merry Christmas. But this particular capture was the very first rehearsal run on recording in the studio the night before the sessions. So it wasn't even recorded in the sessions. And I just, the magic of the moment was so energetic, and we were all so excited, and we were all like just ready and invested. And there were obviously some harmonic things that went wrong, which we really had to work to correct in the post-production. But the energy, and we recorded it, I don't know how many times, the first day of sessions. And I even did some vocal overdubs later. But for the most part, what you hear is the very first rehearsal capture, which I think is remarkable. And the producer, the Jedi Master, was like, this is it. This captures that energy, that sparkle, that spirit of Christmas. And he and Dean Franson, the arranger, wanted to feel that kind of energy in this song. And so that's the take we went with.
What time of year did you record this?
June 16th, I think. I think that particular capture would have been June 15th.
Was it tough to find your way into that feeling, that Christmas feeling to do this? I mean, I know you're a pro and all, but
yeah, I don't know. I think it's just such a beautiful arrangement that, you know, you feel it when you hear it. You're like, oh yeah, this is, it's so original in its own feeling, and it's got such spirit and life and joy. It was easy to step into that role. And I think as an actress and a singer, I can step into that role no matter what season of the year it is. And I'm always a big fan of like Christmas in July. I think it's really, you know, let's go on and get it started early, you know. I don't know. I mean, maybe you could ask some of the other musicians what they would feel. They might have had a hard time, but you surely can't tell in the recording.
Yeah.
you know.
You certainly can't. You know, as far as we've come with technology, I think what a lot of people don't realize is that you can't just record a Christmas song in the season and get it out there in the season. It doesn't work that way. It's like, I know there's the popular story about Mel Torme recording the Christmas song in the heat of summer and how they decorated the studio and everything. But people still do that today.
Yeah.
And because of everything that goes into it, you have to be able to do that. Yeah. I know you were recording other stuff when you, in the sessions, when you recorded this for an album due in 2024. Is there anything you can tell us about that?
Well, there's a couple of great original songs on there. And then there is kind of a Latin theme that we have, even with the Salsa Merry Christmas. We have some unique arrangements of composers that have recently passed away, Michel Legrand, Stephen Sondheim, and Burt Bacharach. And so I have kind of a collection of some of those great songwriter composers, some of their songs, but with a Latin feel and arrangement. So there, we've got some samba and bossa nova and rumba and different things, but there's other feels too. And I wanted to kind of go for a jazzy, loungy, American songbook-ish vibe. It's kind of a montage that I don't even know what the title of the album's going to be yet. So forgive me for not having that information.
Okay.
But what we recorded and what I have heard just in first mixes is absolutely exquisite and beautiful. And I'm really excited to get it out there. So I've had some delays in my personal life that have kept me from pushing it out sooner, but it's coming. It's coming.
Now, before Big Love Holiday, I think Fast Heart was that the last album before?
Yeah.
How does this compare to Fast Heart? Or is that a ridiculous question?
It's just so different in the sense that Fast Heart was like, in my mind, it was like a heart concept album of original music. And it was my first original music that I had published and produced. But it's mixed with some really great jazz writers like Ray Charles and Thelonious Monk. They don't compare in a sense of style, but it's me, right? So it's my voice, it's my voicing, it's my interpretation. I think that this record coming up is going to be fresh and new, a little bit more fun. Fast Heart was pretty deep and pretty intense. And I think that the 2024 album is going to be fun and interesting and familiar, because there's going to be some great writers that people know and identify with, but it's going to have, you know, a Deb Bowman twist. And working with my new producer, the Jedi Master, I'm just really proud to be a part of the collaboration with him, which I feel like moving forward, I don't ever want to do another record without him. So it's a joyful thing, and I'm really excited. I'm excited to share it with the public. Sorry, it's not a holiday record, Ken.
That's okay. I can. What I'm going to do is I'm going to hope that it is a huge, huge success, and that way you'll be able to do a Big Love Holiday 2, maybe, or another direction. Or whatever.
Three,
but I'll be very happy about that. Is there an ETA on the new album, or is it still?
I'm hoping for late summer.
Okay.
And what I'm hoping for is I'm going to do single releases leading up to that. I've been talking to some clubs in New York about a release concert, talking to Birdland again about maybe releasing in concert there late summer of 2024, but it's still kind of up in the air. So what I think is going to happen is we will see, you'll start seeing some singles coming out maybe late spring.
Okay.
And maybe every couple weeks over the summer, and then drop the album late summer, mid late summer.
Great. I hate to ask if you have anything else on the slate for 2024, anything that you can talk about.
Well, I mean, apart from Megalopolis coming out, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
The film. You know, I don't have anything extraordinary to share, but okay. There's going to be some great things I know coming.
I know you've got a lot of things in the works, and I get that you can't divulge the secrets just yet. So we'll keep an eye out for them. What's the best way for people to keep up with you so they'll know when stuff's coming out?
I love it. Thank you. You can always follow me at debbowman.com and on Instagram, Deborah Bowman, D-E-B-O-R-A-H, Bowman, Deborah Bowman on Instagram. And then I'm Deborah Bowman on Facebook. And you can just Google my name. You can find lots of things. And I'm on all streaming services, so you can always stream and love it if you download the music for sure on Apple Music or wherever you listen to your music.
You have a YouTube channel also?
Yes, YouTube, Deborah Bowman as well.
Okay. I'll make sure to put a link there too, just in case there might be some Big Love Holiday concert footage there. From the show.
Uh-huh.
I'll keep my fingers
crossed. Yes. And I should share the Big Love Holiday reel. It's really great. It's on Big Love, it's on YouTube. So there's a really cool teaser show reel from a Big Love Holiday concerts that you might want to share as well.
You know, it's funny. I'm on your website right now and I clicked on the merch thing and I didn't realize that you actually do have a Big Love Holiday hoodie when I had said, you know, buy a shirt, buy a hoodie, buy a keychain. And
yeah.
You really do have a so
I love that hoodie. That hoodie is so great. I have a t-shirt of a Big Love Holiday too for ladies. It's more for ladies. It's a V-neck. And then I have really great little winter caps with a Big Love Holiday for anybody that wants to wear a winter cap, which I love. Got lots of great merch on there.
And there's vinyl for Fast Hearts. So that begs the question, any chance there's going to be vinyl for Big Love Holiday? I know it's
expensive. Yeah, that's a great idea, Ken. I talked about this, doing a Big Love Holiday vinyl press, and I kind of lost momentum. So maybe next season.
Okay.
But I definitely plan to do a vinyl press for the upcoming record. But, you know, how cool would it be to have like a bright red or a beautiful green or a beautiful white with like some kind of design vinyl press for a Big Love Holiday? I think I should do that in the future.
See, you should do all three. So then fans have to get all three.
Yeah. Yes.
It's been so much fun catching up with you. Thanks so much for coming back on the podcast and talking about
thank
all
you,
this stuff.
Ken. Thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
And thank you so much for listening and for continuing to support the Sounds of Christmas station and podcast. I already told you how to listen to the station, and you're listening to the podcast now, so my work here is just about done. All of our episodes are available on the Sounds of Christmas website. Just click the podcast tab. And we also have a Linktree page that lists most, if not all, of the streaming sites that carry our podcast, so you can find your favorite, and you can click on over and subscribe, and then you'll never miss another episode. If you have comments or suggestions on this episode, previous episodes, or the Sounds of Christmas station, feel free to reach out to me on social media or through the website. Thanks again, and may you always believe in Santa Claus.